Hello and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Darkness. It's a Wednesday. I'm your host for this week, Tim Dennis, your co-host and producer of the show. Dave is being lost somewhere in Rendlesham Forest, as far as we know. If you haven't seen the pictures, you can go to his social media right now. Go to darknessradio.com, click on Dave's picture, and figure out how you can follow him on Twitter or Facebook or even on Instagram. And see some of those pictures from that trip that he's on right now in England with some of our listeners. And of course, if you don't know how you can go along on some of these wonderful excursions, it's simple. Go to darknessevents.com and you can figure out how you can follow Dave or myself around the nation, around the country, around the world, and go on some of these paranormal excursions. So make sure that you do that right now. Go to darknessradio.com. We have a huge treat in store for you tonight on Wayback Week. It's Wayback Week, by the way. If you don't know what that means that we're visiting some of our favorite shows from the Darkness Radio era and beyond the darkness. And today is a special one indeed. In fact, early in our show's incarnation, we were blessed to have Dan Aykroyd on the show. At the time, he was promoting a DVD that he had out having to do with UFOs. And people thought it was kind of a weird crossover, but Dan Aykroyd has a rich paranormal history, and he wanted to bring out his interest in UFOs onto DVD. We were lucky enough to get him on the show, and not only him, but also his co-producer of the DVD and director of the DVD as well, David Sarita, who joins us too tonight. So tonight we're delving deep into the world of the paranormal and into the world of UFOs with Dan Aykroyd. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Here's Dan Aykroyd on Beyond the Darkness.
Good evening and welcome to an extra special edition of Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me as always, my co-host and producer, Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
Howdy, y'all.
Wanted to just take a quick second here at the beginning of the show before we launch in and welcome all of our listeners and thank and wish all of the listeners that are fathers a very happy Father's Day. We'd also like to dedicate this evening's show to my father, James Lojewski. We love you, Dad.
And Roy Dennis and Leroy Johnson. I have a dad and a stepdad, so I got to mention them both. Otherwise, there's hard feelings all around.
We're going to get launching right into our show this evening. As I mentioned, top of the hour, and for any of you that have been barraged by my email blasts, we've got a fantastic guest with us this evening. Dan Aykroyd is an actor, he's a writer, he's a producer, and he's one of the foremost stars, I guess you would say, out there in the forefront talking about the paranormal and talking about things like UFOs, ghosts. He actually was the host of a TV show, Psi Factor, The Chronicles of the Paranormal. Tonight we have him on to talk to us about a brand new DVD that's just been released. It's called Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs. Good evening, Mr. Aykroyd, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, very good. You have a very Fortean intro to your show with all encompassing everything that goes on around the world outside of the four dimensions that we're used to. Of course, I imagine you're big fans of the Fortean books and Charles Fort.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. We've been trying to, you know, what was with the intention of bringing the show out was two guys that have a beginning interest in the paranormal. We've had experiences happen to us, and we'd like to explore it along with our guests. So we're bringing people on like yourself that have had experiences and have great stories to tell, share, and help to educate all the rest of us
Good.
As well.
There's so many great realms to explore here, from the chupacabra to what we're talking about tonight, that is machines that were not manufactured on Earth and are coming from somewhere else.
Now, for the people that are just tuning in, our guest this evening is Dan Aykroyd, and he's got a brand new DVD out. It's called Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs. And let's get these questions out of the way real quick. This is not a mockumentary like Spinal Tap. This isn't a comedy or a science fiction movie. This is an actual documentary that Mr. Aykroyd is participating in with David Sarita, and they have some fantastic guests on there as well, like astronaut Gordon Cooper, who come on and talk about real experiences, and they share some just incredible footage of UFOs.
Well, I encourage people to get the DVD wherever you can buy them, all over Amazon, of course, FYE, Borders, Chapters in Canada, Target, you know, the usual places. But just put the speed gun on my boring talk and get to this amazing footage we have. And you'll be entertained and distracted from the hardships of life for an hour and a half as you ponder the what surely is the greatest mystery here confronting us: how these craft can operate at such speeds, overcoming G-forces and gravity and almost time and in some theories. And to me, it's one of the greatest mysteries confronting us. And if we can get to the heart of that, perhaps we can do something to improve the path of the species on this planet.
Now, you yourself have had two experiences with UFOs.
Well, I had a high-altitude sighting shared with three other people, and I had a telepathic experience with thousands of people in the region where it happened, up here in Ontario and upstate New York in the mid-80s.
With these events that happened, now, did you feel, and I know the one that you had with the telepathic, you...
That was repeated also in the mid-90s, or in the early 90s, in Gatineau, Quebec.
And can you explain
Hull,
to...
And the same thing happened. 1,000 people were urged to come out at around midnight or so and look at this object in the sky, and they all came out at the same time. And, of course, the radio stations were abuzz with it, the police, and... Now, this is a big thing when you're summoned in a mass situation like this, and it's happened all over the planet. And I was part of one. I actually didn't get out of bed. My wife said, go back to sleep, and I did. The schmuck, I missed it. But
Well, don't beat yourself up, Mr. Eckhart. You're married to the beautiful Donna Dixon, and if she told me to stay in bed, I would.
What would you rather do, go out and see the alien ship or stay in bed with her? Well, I made the right choice. But the thing is, I shared in this. Other people were talking about it in the media and the radio, and I told her, I said, hey, remember last night when I had that thought and you told me to go back to bed? Well, look at this. And I showed her and stuff on the news, and you know, we tuned into the radio and we read the local paper about it, and it was fascinating. It was great. It was all written up in the media. The media is not hiding this, and neither is the government, by the way. The government's been very interested in these things for many, many years.
With things that have occurred like that, and there was the one that occurred through the Illinois area, and they've had specials on it where police from
Finley
different
Park.
Areas, right, we're actually following this from district to district, and I guess it even went into another state, kind of doing a semicircle.
Well, the greatest, one of the greatest audio adventures you can ever get are the Liberty, I think it's Libertyville, Ohio tapes, and it tracks four to six officers racing across the terrain in the, I think it was like the late 70s this happened to them. And they have the audio tapes from the police cars chasing this thing, and it ends with one of them climbing up on a water tower and looking at this thing hovering in the sky right near him. And, you know, it wasn't Venus. They weren't racing with the moon. I mean, it wasn't a helicopter. This was something that they all witnessed. And in Tinley Park, Illinois, now, a woman said on Halloween that three kids had put up three glowing balloons on Halloween night. And this was her explanation. And, you know, I was really thankful at least someone came forward from Tinley Park to address it and at least talk about it in one way or another. And she said, no, this wasn't a UFO. This was balloons going up. But at least she admitted that something happened there.
Well, the one I'm referring to, and I don't know if maybe you're not familiar with it, there was another one that took place, and I've just recorded the special not too long ago. I think it was on Discovery Channel, where there was actually this large flying craft. They said it was about the size of a football field, running silent. The guy said it was huge, and one police officer was talking about it, and they were playing the dispatch tapes of all these dispatchers laughing about it, and then all of a sudden another officer in another county goes, wait a minute, he's not joking. I'm picking it up. It's coming right towards me.
Yeah, I heard that. Did that take place in Illinois?
Yeah, I believe that did take place. Yeah. It said, because the name of the special is UFOs Over Illinois, and they interview these different officers, and they talk about this giant flying craft. So, again, it can't possibly be, you know, balloons or you know, gas. It's a huge
building. Not when they go 3 miles an hour, and then they accelerate up to 30,000, you know. It's just the whole thing is fascinating and very, very, very entertaining. And we just see countless reports now from people in aviation and law enforcement, not only fishermen sitting out drinking on docks in Mississippi. This happens to, you know, this happens to a lot of people, and we're not alone. Let's read the Lawrence Rockefeller Report right there. But, proof is hard to come by. There's a guy named Ted Phillips, and all he does is go around the world and gather trace evidence. And I know you're familiar with MUFON.com.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's a great website, great people there, and a great database of scientists who are really interested in this. And think of what we could learn as far as propulsion, maglev technology, zero-point energy, which David Cerita will talk about in the next hour, how these crafts are manipulated, metallurgy, how they can vibrate to such levels of light spectra that we can't see them, and then they wink in and out of existence, seemingly to us.
Well, don't you feel that maybe we're already getting some of that information from alien forces that have I mean, the stories are grand in scope of people telling us that the aliens are already here, they're making their connections, they're how we're making advancements in technology. Do you feel that that's maybe how we're getting things like the stealth bomber and different technology that, as of 50 years ago was impossible?
Not yet. I don't think yet, no. Mankind, the Skunk Works, these guys were brilliant scientists. They were able to make up these wafers that deflect radar and come up with these patterns. And this was just, I think, natural evolution in aviation. However, this technology is out there. It's being manufactured by some species somewhere. And whoever commands it on Earth will have superiority beyond measure. And the Chinese have been very, very interested in UFOs for years. And now there's some files coming out with some interesting footage and photographs from China of sightings and an object in the sky. And, if they get this technology or any part of it, I think we should be very wary. I'd like to see the United States Air Force Rondell on the side of some of this technology. That would not bother me at all.
Well, with these UFOs that are making appearances in every state, every country has got UFO stories. These even mandate, they go all the way back through historical times. There's historical references and cave paintings of UFOs and mention in ancient Egypt in the hieroglyphs.
And now digital images and photographs and films and anecdotes and from credible and authorized sources and trace evidence from Ted Phillips in terms of radiation, soil samples, the implants that Roger Lear's been taking out of people. I mean, there's your tangible evidence there.
How do you feel that the government can continue to cover this up then with all of this information out there, with all these lights and everything?
They haven't been. They've been fascinated with it. Project Sign, Project Grudge, Project Blue Book, the Condon Report. They've trotted countless Air Force officers in uniform out in front of people because people were asking these questions, precisely what we're asking tonight. There's footage of Harry Truman sitting there with a reporter asking, well, what about all these flying saucers in this investigation? Well, we're looking to the bottom of it. We don't know what's there. And he actually says that. Ronald Reagan told people he was fascinated. He had his entire staff up in arms about a sighting when he was coming back from Sacramento in a twin-engine plane. And he and Nancy both saw it, and they ordered the pilots to follow. And he used to talk about it at Hollywood parties quite openly. Carter filed a NICAP report, so you have the Air Force and the government constantly interested in trying to get to the bottom of this, and they wrote everything off but 20%, and those 20% they came out as unexplained. Now, is there a sub level somewhere of black box work going on with EBEs that were brought here? If you believe the story that Jackie Gleason told, he said Nixon got him in to Wright Patterson Air Force Base to actually view the bodies. I mean, that's great UFO lore. I think that could be more folklore than fact. Who's going to find out? I think we all are. I think the greatest revelation is coming.
But you believe that at this point we have not made official contact with the UFOs or with alien races?
Well, I think sub-official contact has probably been made. I like the scenario laid out in Roswell, where Secretary Forrestal actually was presented to a being, and then that was a factor in him jumping out the window. I mean, that's kind of a nice extrapolation. Again, folklore and that. But, that seems as plausible to me as many theories as to what's going on here.
Well, are you familiar with James Gilliland?
I like James Gilliland. I want to go up to his place. Him and Stephen Greer. These are two gentlemen, if the listeners aren't familiar. Stephen Greer, of course. I'm sure he's been on your show.
Not yet. We've had James Gilliland, but that's what we're working on the Stephen Greer for.
Okay, well, both of those guys, they summon these vessels, and you can go up to their ranches or go out to their, and they bring hundreds of people, and you can sit there, and they work with lasers, they work with meditation, and they conjure and summon these things up out of the, you know, out of the ether or the black matter, the antimatter, however they're powering themselves, and they're great displays. I don't know. Have you been up to his ranch? I never have.
We spoke to him. You know, I had heard him on an Art Bell show and contacted him shortly after because, you know, I mean, you listen to it and some of the stuff was just so wackadoo sounding. But what I really loved was the conviction of him continuing to say, come to the ranch and see it for yourself. I'm not hiding anything here. I've got photographs. Everybody's got photographs. I've got sound and video. Everybody's got that. You come to my ranch, and I'll show you. And we had him on the show, and he invited. We're going to actually set up an appointment in September to take about 60 to 100 listeners with us out to James Ranch.
Well, bring your cameras, because I hear it's spectacular.
Well, that's what he said. I said, James, now be honest with me here. As honest as you can be, what are our chances of seeing UFO activity? He said, Dave, if it's a clear night, you have a 90% chance.
Yeah.
And he said, come for two nights, and I promise you'll walk away seeing UFOs.
Yeah.
He has photographs of the black copters flying over his property. I mean, he's got amazing footage and stories to tell. And I was curious about that. So you have not had the chance to go there
yet? I haven't, but, you know, the similar experiences were spoken of in Pine Bush, New York, and Ellen Crystal recently, sort of deceased a little while back. Very spiritual lady. She organized adventures and trips, and Mailbox Road was what they called the place there, and they used to, people would line up with campers and cameras and photograph these things coming and going in behind a range of mountains there in the county, Green County, Green or Orange County, I think it was, New York State, you know. They're coming and going like taxis. Lord Hill Norton, the defense minister, was attached to the Air Force, Air Force Defense Assistant Secretary, said he thought 23 different species were hopping in and out of the of our sphere here, of this multiple spheres of protection, atmosphere, ionosphere, stratosphere. They skip through there and are seen and unseen and unveil themselves to us, and they're watching us.
Now, if I could ask, some of the footage that you share on this I've seen before. Some of it was brand new. Some of the footage that I've seen that you showed as purported UFO activity, like from the shuttle, they were able to show, there were a couple of lights that looked to be coming out of our atmosphere, and then they kind of bank at crazy angles. Now, I've heard that the theory is behind that. Those are simply just ice particles or things that you're seeing reflected outside the window.
Okay, well, let's call those ones ice particles, but let's call the lifesaver, the one with the little hole in it.
Right.
Well, that thing, that was shuttle STS-79. That footage has the broken tether from the satellite that went out. So that's a mile long. They know that tether's a mile long, and they know that was 100 miles away. By the time they were able to get a picture of it, they couldn't catch it when it came out of the shuttle. The tether broke, the satellite and the tether flowed away. And then in behind it, there's this object, which seems to be about, a fifth in the size of the tether. So it's miles across, this thing. And if it's ice in the windshield when they flush the toilet, well, they're the scientists, not me. But I came from their cameras, and, you put together, as David Serrata did in his tape evidence, just exactly the dimensions of the broken tether, how far the shuttle was away, what this object was. It's very compelling that it wasn't ice on the windshield.
Now, one thing that I really enjoyed about watching the DVD, I mean, they're coming to you as a, I don't want to call it an expert, but they're coming to you as somebody that's of a public figure that has an interest in this. And I've read some nasty reviews of the DVD, picking on you and your position in Hollywood and doing this. But what I really enjoyed was one of the lines.
Very good. At least someone out there seeing it and reacting to it. We're punching through.
Right. You even state, though, that you're not an expert. You just are entertained like this, like the rest of us. But you're in a higher position. Were you concerned at all, having being in the public eye as you are, and a celebrity of your stature? Do you have fear that people? I know when Shirley MacLaine first came out with her books about her prior lives and things, she was completely written off as a nut job. And it's, people started accepting it later. Did you feel that would have any effect on you or your career?
Well, I'm sure people still think that Shirley's a nut job, and they probably think that I am too. But, you know, that's up to them to decide. As far as my association with this, I went on Johnny Carson, you know, long before probably, you know, when you were a kid, probably, and talked about my experiences with my family and the old haunted house here, and my grandfather's interest as a spiritualist at the time that Arthur Conan Doyle was also interested in the afterlife and the Fox sisters, the Bang sisters, all these incredible, beautiful, you know, phenomena that that happened in front of people that my family was interested in, which led me to write Ghostbusters. So people know I'm into, very fascinated with the paranormal, and I'm a believer that, you know, it's all not the end when the corpus goes, of the spirit and energy of the soul lives on and goes on to great new adventures.
What are your theories about, you know, crossing over? Do you believe that there are spirits that are trapped here? I mean, we're an energy-based form.
I do, yes. Well, all you have to do about ghosts, now, again, you know, I'm not alone in all this.
Right.
And before I talk about the master of ghost-busting in the world today, and I know you know his name, let me just say that I got back into this this UFO stuff because I was in Cleveland, Ohio, opening our House of Blues. I have a lot of other interests in my life, and... you know, I've got the distributorship with John Paul DeJoria for the Patron tequila line in Canada, so you could hook that up and say he drinks tequila, he must see UFOs. But, I've got the we've got House of Blues, which we're, you know, is a, you know, a core business of nightclubs. We're the third largest entertainer in terms of live music in the world. I've got a concert business with Brother Z, the blood brother of Jake Blues. So, you know, this was something that I kind of left behind, but I was in Cleveland, and we were advertising our House of Blues, our beautiful new House of Blues there, if you can get to it, at Euclid Street in the Flats, and I was in the local CBS affiliate, I believe it was, and the guy there says to me, would you do a little piece on UFOs for our late night? I said, what? Really? People still interested in this? He said, yeah, every time we put this on the air, the ratings spike on our channel. We can advertise it. And every time we put a UFO story, and we'll, you know, we'll beat the other guy in the ratings. People are fascinated in Ohio and on the Ohio coast with these stories. And so I did. It sort of got me back into it. That's why I did this thing with Sarita. But no, I got a lot of good time things happening in my life, and people know from Coneheads and from Ghostbusters that this is an area of fascination for me, and that I've got friends, Landis, Ramis, they'll never believe me, and, you know, the man that you have to turn to for all ghost research, of course, is the eminent and wonderful Hans Holzer, H-O-L-Z-E-R. He has written the definitive manual on how to handle spirits and where they live and how they've resided and some of the greatest ghost stories ever. You know, television should buy up his stories because they are real ghost stories, and he is the real thing, Hans Holzer. I think he's got a website as well.
With the shows that you've done now, you did Psi Factor, Chronicles of the Paranormal. You also were
that
working...
The first year of that was the best year because we actually hewed very closely to the cases that came out of this file from this engineering group that was very well funded and wanted to see how they could apply technology to understanding, you know, the realm beyond the fourth dimension, if you want to cut to the shorthand of it. But the second, third, and fourth year, they kind of, the television company took over, and kind of it skewed out into the, you know, the hour drama format, and you know, it got away from the real genuine nature of the first year of the cases that we were trying to depict. Although the cast was great, rightfully end, and it's a miracle that a show stayed on in the syndicated market for 4 years of that nature.
Is it going to be available on DVD for people?
I don't know what the... That company completely abandoned their television and film business and went just into distribution of movies. Now they're into the specialty channel business, a company called Atlantis Alliance. So you might get on their website, I don't know, and see if you can find Chronicles of the Paranormal and see if you can get it on DVD. I doubt you can. It still plays at foreign, and it was on TBS for a while, or one of the Turner channels, I think.
Now, you were picked up with a new show that you were going to be bringing to the Sci-Fi Network, correct?
Well, no, that got canceled the day that I interviewed Stephen Bassett. Or actually, I interviewed either one or the other, and I was supposed to interview the other, but then the show was canceled 20 minutes after. They were both in the building when the show was canceled, but the show was canceled 20 minutes after I had interviewed one of them. I was out having a lunch break, and I talk about that in the DVD. And people, you do not have to believe about the disappearing car, but that's what happened. It really, you know.
Yeah, that was fascinating.
It really happened. I mean, you do not have to believe that story, please. You know, and it's perfect for the tabloids. I'm on the phone with Britney Spears, and they make a car disappear in front of me. But interestingly enough, you know, 20 minutes later, they pulled the plug and said, we're changing our format. We don't need this type of show. And
how many shows had you recorded by that time?
I'd recorded 20. 20.
And they just pulled the plug on you, huh?
Well, you know, Bassett's so credible there. He sits, you talk to Bassett, and, you know, it's very believable. And then I was going to have Greer on, who can summon them, you know. So, I mean, maybe this was, maybe their plant in there, the guy who was from Jesse Raphael's show. Nice man. He was trying to make me into a talk show host. I guess he went home, he scurried home and told them what was being said that day and what, you know, what we were going to bust out. Maybe not. Maybe they really were going to change their format. I don't know. But I know that all transpired. And did I shed one tear, gentlemen, when that show was canceled? Or when I had a bad movie or a bad record or whatever? Never. You never cry over show business, gentlemen. Never.
Are you going to make those shows available? I know.
Never weep.
You talk about those shows, possibly.
I'm going to see if we can repackage in some way or another. They're very interesting. I had Linda Moulton Howe on. Fascinating lady. You've had her on, I guess. You know Linda?
No, I know her. Yeah, I've heard her a ton of times.
The cattle mutilation lady, the cattle right. mutilation expert. I had the gentleman who's, you know, the doctor from South Dakota there. I forget his name right now. Doug of something. Trying to remember. Expert on Bigfoot, you know, the Chupacabra expert. Had the heir to the Von Daniken files, you know. It was really just wonderful. I just danced around. And the Fortean guy, the guy who publishes Fortean News,
right.
had a wonderful, you know, it was like your show, except there I was in, like Larry King in a vest for half an hour, just touching on issues that I think are entertaining and fun and break out of the confines of the life we live and the reality that we have to hack our way through every day.
Well, when are we going to get to hear you on the radio doing a paranormal show?
Well, I in the persona of Elwood Blues, we've been on the air for 12
right,
years
with House
and
of Blues.
178 stations with United Syndicates. That's United Stations Syndicate. That's our great syndicator, and we have the House of Blues Radio Hour. So that fills the radio plate right now. You guys are doing such a great job. So you should stay at it there and get wide with it. Are you on Armed Forces Radio yet with it?
Not yet. You know, we actually fired the show off in January, January 1st of this year. It took it to this little station, and they were willing to give us a shot to put us on the air when everybody else was saying no. And it's ballooned pretty quickly for us, and we've had a lot of great support from, you know, a lot of the paranormal TV shows and hosts and other paranormal radio shows. And we've gotten quite a bit of support out there, and we've gotten a lot of listeners. So we are hoping to take it a little bit larger and start getting heard more. You know, certainly that's what our goal is here. Like
well,
I said, to spread the word.
You could do. I mean, the Mothman, the whole Mothman, the movies of, I mean, that's just a beautiful story. The Braxton Woods monster, you know, these, not only, you know, this, it's this parazoological aspect to it, the suprazoological aspect, the giant sloths, the that they've, you know, tracked in Brazil, you know, the whole concept of Yeti and Bigfoot and the universal sightings of these 7 to 9 foot high creatures all over. You know, I guess I believe it all because it's fun to believe.
Sure. You know, it was actually Jeff Corwin.
We need skeptics to sort out the hoaxes from the real thing.
That's true.
I just, you know, when so many people see you know, you've just got mass sightings of these objects now. And Lawrence Rockefeller, they're sitting in the Hudson River estate that he owned for years, and he sees one appear and do a show for him for 10 minutes, and he just got obsessed with it, and he did the Rockefeller Report. And if you read that, that is very, very compelling on the subject of these UFOs. And I've spoken to a lot of military people, as many of the researchers have, and, you know, Bassett, you know, and Greer, they have these thick books of testimonies. You know, and these aren't from flakes or hippies or, you know, people on acid. This is, you know, this is...
Not that there's anything wrong with those people.
no, but like me, you know, the night of my sighting, I was drinking, and, you know, my sighting should be discounted because I might have had too much alcohol. So, you know, if you take the sightings of those who are non-sober, you can discount them as one should, but take the sightings of the sober and the professionals and, you know, like Iranian jet pilots and or Belgian jet pilots. You've seen that famous footage of the jet closing in on that object, haven't
right.
you?
Right.
Yeah, isn't that neat?
Now, you also have the footage in there where they saw the 7 lights. And who was at that? Which air
Okay, that was a Mexican Department of Justice, Ministry of Justice drug interdiction plane that filmed these objects over the mountains on their flight to kind of hand it over to the DEA. Now, I've heard that there's American DEA footage of the same objects. Now, those objects were explained as oil, fire, flares at refineries about 50 miles away. So you can look on the DVD as again gun through me, folks, and just get to the great pictures and great footage and great photos. And you know, hey, well, everything could be faked, but you know,
right. Well,
Bruce
that's
McAbee,
what I heard about.
Bruce McAbee, if Bruce McAbee signs off, he's the department. He's the Navy commander who does all the photographic analysis for MUFON. If he looks at a photo and says it's genuine or a piece of film, I think we're going off the McAbee standard on this video.
Okay, so that's what you're following. That's what I was going to ask you. One of the theories I had thought that they had said was that what looked like sky was actually the water, and that the planes were shooting down, the film down, and that's why you were picking up, and there happened to be oil refineries that they can actually show are in those exact same positions. That's why they were using that as the base for what it was.
Yep. Well, it's just that the speed of the plane, that the objects were, well, the crew says they were tracked by the objects, you see.
Oh, that's right.
The crew speaks of it, and then you can see that they're being followed, that they're at least they're flying along parallel, and the objects are in flight, it seems to be. But again, you know, break it on down, rip it on, you know, I don't have time to break it on down. I'm just, that I throw out there as because, you know, it was released by the Ministry of Justice. They felt it was important enough to let it out, the Ministry of Defense. And the pilot spoke of it, and Jaime Masson, I think, was the investigator there who got it released. He's very, very, very reputable in the ufology community. Have you had him on?
Not yet.
Oh yeah, he's great.
I'm jotting all these names down though as we go.
Yeah,
so.
Masson, Masson, MUFON, www.mufon.com.
Actually, I'm having John on our show for the 4th of July weekend for MUFON, so
yeah,
he's going to be with us.
Yeah, try to find Charles Fort's book. It's very rare.
All right.
Very rare.
Definitely. Now, we do have a few questions, if you don't mind, from a few people that are listening. And go ahead, Tim. What was the question on the board?
Well, Mr. Ackroyd, we're all over the board on these questions, so we'll try and put them in a logical order here for you. Let's go first on your views on the underwater UFO phenomenon where craft are sighted going in and out of large bodies of water. What's your take on this, and what do you believe is happening?
I would refer you to the Linda Cortile case, the Bud Hopkins catalog case, which was witnessed by a New York State Supreme Court judge. Two United Nations security officers witnessed it so much so they got obsessed with trying to find the woman after they saw her being, floated out of her apartment near the East River, near the Brooklyn Bridge, floated into a craft. The craft then descended into the East River and disappeared like a submarine. These guys went on a quest trying to find the apartment of the woman. They identified her. Bud Hopkins was able to intercede and calm everybody down, as he does in these spectacular abduction cases. So, hey, they can go anywhere they want. They, you know, as Sarita will talk about how they work. Ask them how they work. They work on a very high vibrating spectra, and it's all encompassed within the physics that we have theoretically on our planet now, understood physics. It's just a matter of harnessing it and understanding how to apply all of the different disciplines of metallurgy, the boiling of whatever the element is that enables them to derive such power, whether it's radioactive or subatomic or...
Okay.
You know, it's zero-point fusion might be a clue. David's very, very, very up on this. He's passionate about finding how they work.
Okay, we'll throw that past him in the second hour here. Ectoman would like to know if you believe that reptilian aliens are living among us, masquerading as humans. Do you subscribe to that theory?
It's entirely possible. I don't, you know, you don't write anything out, really, when you get into... Some of the things that have happened in South America and, to Puerto Rico and sightings in Puerto Rico and, these holes and portals that are spoken of, and the blue earth, the inner earth, all these are wonderful, wonderful, sort of theories to throw out there. And, look, anything's possible because we live in a multiverse of infinite possibilities. So,
well, I'd like to ask you about the multiverse. Now, that's something a lot of people are not familiar with. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? What are your theories of the multiverse, and what exactly does it encompass?
Well, I think it encompasses all of the dimensions that were created when the Big Bang occurred, from from the four dimensions we live in, length, height, width, and time, to the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, right on through 29, some even theorize. I mean, this is spoken of in the Cambridge monographs and the superstring theory that came out of there. And, you know, Hawking touches on it. And David, again, can elaborate, but...
Are these alternate realities?
Yeah, these are alternate realities. They could be a millimeter, two square millimeters in dimension, or two cubic, you know, millimeters in dimension, and be right next to your ear. They, H.P. Lovecraft touched on it in his writing. He touched on skipping from dimension to dimension with these beautiful orbed. Orbed objects. I think he might have been a UFO witness. You know, he disappeared. He completely vanished. Walked out of his house for cigarettes and never came back. You know Lovecraft, of course.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, so sure, reptilians. I think there's a breeding program going on. There's many walk among us, and we can only hope that the majority are here to help us along. I think they're fascinated, whoever they are, how many of them are coming, because we are the most beautiful planet in the multiverse. I believe we are the center of the multiverse, in fact. I think it's they've got it wrong when they say we're not the center of the universe. We are. Where else? What other planet has created the Beatles, the Stones, and given us Beethoven and the Rocky Mountains and
the Blues Brothers,
Thieves, and Willie Dixon, more importantly,
sure.
and Otis Redding and Steve Cropper and Duck Dunn and great TV shows and comedies. I mean, I just don't know, you know, where you can go to the Museum of Natural History, and they will take you on a PowerPoint presentation which slings you way out to where the Hubble is seeing the beginning of time, 14 billion years from now, and they will take you back and show you our little speck, which is like a mote on a mole's ass. And even though we're that little speck, we're a pretty special little speck, given, the spectacular achievements in art and culture, in music and architecture, in science, in human progression, in violence, mechanized warfare, on the negative side of it, in perfidy and just the literature, the music. I mean, there's no place else in the multiverse like this little blue ball where that has occurred, and I think that is a matter of great interest to beings that have a million, maybe a billion years of technology on us, and can skip from dimension to dimension. Who's to say they can't if they have that much time? Look where we've come in 100 years, from the Wright brothers to the Boeing 777. I mean, spectacular.
Right, fabric wings to
whirling turbines with gas, and it all lands safely after 2,000 times. You know, it's amazing.
Are you familiar with Wayne Herschel and his new book, The Hidden Records?
No. Tell me about that.
We actually had Wayne on our show a few weeks ago. He's from South Africa, and if you have an interest, please, and for the listeners, check out the website. It's thehiddenrecords.com. And Wayne has done some amazing research where he's able to find that the actual architecture of the pyramids line themselves up perfectly with star maps in the sky. And his theory, and I guess they match also with the pyramids and the face that appear on Mars, he's actually able to show it, and it's not just some guy speculating. He takes the actual photographs and overlays the star maps over the top of them with the Pleiades and Tim, help me out. What's the belt?
I wonder. Yeah. Well, you know, you should run him by Margaret Fisk. She's a great star mapper. She tracked the Betty Hill star map, and traced it to Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2.
And that's what he's able to prove. And what he's showing is that he believes that that's pointing where we came from, and that explains why on Earth there is a missing link. His theory is that we wiped out Neanderthal man.
Well, there's a great film about that. I know you, now, gentlemen. I know you know it, and it wasn't received like commercially in an expansive way when it came out. But it is a spectacular movie, and it is the movie that a lot of NASA people kind of wink and say, you know, that really gets it close to what we theorize in our bull sessions and just sitting around the patio drinking Patron.
You're not talking about Encino Man, are you?
I'm not. I'm talking about the Mission to Mars movie with Tim Robbins.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that was a superb film, actually, and it really planted the idea of the seeding and explained the face and all that, and his performance was wonderful. And and as I say, you know, the NASA people find that you know, sort of under the table, they say that they believe that really really comes closest to, you know, what could be a plausible theory if you're you know, sort of poking around in that area of our existence and our origins.
Well, I had spoken with Wayne Herschel, as I just spoke to you about, that you're going to be on the show, and he had asked me to touch base with you. He also sent out a book, one of his books, for you. I don't know if after the interview, if you have a publicist address or so, we can send it out to you. We'll make sure we get it out to you.
I'll make sure Susie, Susie set this up, you can send it to her.
All right, great. Yeah, we'll get that out to you and give you a chance. I think there's really some fascinating points in that for you.
Well, I love Richard Hoagland's... photographs. I had them all blown up. I went and I presented Disney with the idea for a ride there when my friend Mr. Michael Ovitz was running the company for about 10 minutes. And I had that all blown up. And boy, I'll tell you, they held up under blow up conditions and scrutiny. And but again, you know, they say that's just shadows, you know, shadows in the sand.
Well, I know he was just on with Wayne on George Norrie's show last week and was there agreeing with Wayne's theories on a lot of the things in star maps that he's been able to find. So it's...
Well, yes. Well, as I say, you know, they're very interested in us. You know, the Renaissance, great painting. Just we are an incredible species. I'd be perhaps a little disappointing right now in the progression, you know, because of the violence on the planet. I hope that we come out the other end of it, like, you know, in terms of, you know, understanding why and how these beings are here and how their technology works and why they're here. I hope.
Do you feel that'll come to us in the next 50 to 100 years?
I think it could very, very well, a mass understanding of it. And it just take us out the other side to improving the planet, improving how we speak and act with each other, and you know, there are higher sources and higher powers, and now, we should defer to the great spirit. You know,
you touched on a little bit ago, you were talking about the cattle mutilations. You know, one thing that I've always been curious about, and I guess I don't understand, if these aliens have this type of technology that they're able to zip into our farmlands and make these crop circles and take parts from cattle, why would they leave the
Go ahead.
Why do you feel that they'd leave so much of it behind for us to see? Wouldn't it make sense more to them to just take the whole cow and cut off what they want and then jettison the rest?
Well, they do. They jettison the rest, and they find these cows with lips burnt off and anuses removed. And we know it's a delicacy.
Well, hot dogs, isn't that what you eat?
they love these. They chew them all night, man. It's, you know, they can travel from galaxy to galaxy chewing cow anus. And I truly believe that's all it is. And, of course, they're not going to carry a stinky cow with maggots, so they throw it out. But Linda Moulton Howe's your lady, man. What a great, courageous lady. She and a sheriff out in Colorado kind of broke this thing open into us and to the scientific community. And and crop circles, by the way, they say 80% are fakes. 20%, 10% are sort of have been genuinely witnessed as happening in front of people, and 10% they're not sure of. That's according roughly to Colin Andrews, whose entire file is for sale. He wants to sell all of his pictures and everything. I love Levengood, you know, Levengood, Dr. Levengood. It's doubtful he can get them on, but Dr. Talbot, Dr. Levengood, they're the ones who verified, you know, the breakage in the stocks, to verify whether it broke with a carboniferous outblow, you know, something black, or did it bend? Did it bend and just snap without any fire, without any heat? And that was sort of an indication of whether or not you had a genuine plasma event, like these crop circles are supposed to have been associated with.
Do you feel that with the alien technology that's out there, with them coming here, I'm not real sure on everything. You know, I mean, you see it in the movies, you see it on TV, and you know, the news stories that we're trying to shoot them out of the sky. Why do you feel we'd invite them? It was the 80s, I believe, we sent off a capsule that actually had a gold engraved album on it with welcoming to Earth.
Well, they're
hoping to bring alien life here, only to be...
Where we're being hosed through the back door is what's going on. They're, you know, John Mack's book Abducted and Bud Hopkins' work and many other people, psychiatrists in every state, I think you can find, treat people who think they've been taken. Now they're coming in the back door, and they're not, you know, they're not being square with us. And that, and you know, in fact, they aren't really sharing anything with us. They should be sharing all this stuff with us, and it's up to them to step up and start sharing with us now. And you know, and I don't think they will. They prefer to observe us and meddle and skip through. And we have some spectacular Phoenix Lights footage on our video.
Right, that's amazing.
Yeah,
that was
well,
a
that's
great
the
story.
Tourist episode there. They were just tourists going through. They went through the most lighted part of the valley, and they showed themselves and toured. The Air Force said it was flares.
Right, flares that jet off into different angles after a couple hours. And
yeah, it stopped over a guy's barbecue, though. I mean, that story's wonderful. He looked up, and there it was, and, you know, and it stopped for his family and then moved on, you know. And it was 100 feet above his house. I mean, that, you know, thanks. There you go. There's your evidence. It's showing people all the time, you know. But it's what we do with it that's important now. Those who believe that something's going on or have seen, hundreds of thousands have seen, what do we do with it? Let's put it together now and come through the other end like John Mack did in his research, you know, the great Harvard psychiatrist who was killed mysteriously, well, you know, in a drunk driving accident, but tragically, certainly he was in England last year. And he came through the other end of the research saying, you know, that we've got to transform the planet now. This is the message here.
Do you have any concern for yourself? I mean, you had what might have been a visit from the Men in Black type issue when you were telling the story a little bit earlier.
Well, who knows? Who knows was able? That could have been just a projection, a holographic projection from the back of a van across the street that I didn't see.
Does it concern you ever? Are you ever concerned for your safety because of things that you've learned and people you've spoken to?
It's all in the public domain. First of all, nothing that I have on this DVD or have ever spoken of has not been published either in the electronic or media press, apart from some personal anecdotes. And like Belushi, he said he saw a UFO, and I have a friend in the film business who said he was tracked by one. He's a very famous director, tracked by one with his friend in the 70s in Rhode Island. Belushi spoke of his experience. You know, other than sort of things like that. And
right, but those are coming from so many different places and from so many different people. But when a high-profile name, Dan Aykroyd, steps forward and starts to combine these things together, that's where I could see that they would see more of a danger, because people like you, they respect you. You know, you're not looked at as just a comedic actor. You're an intelligent man. You're well-spoken, and you have an obvious passion for this. That's what I would think. I understand that's all kind of already out there and in the deal, but it's the bringing it together that makes it more of a danger. I mean,
you might ask Stanford Friedman the same question. Here he is, you know, a really eminent scientist who worked on nuclear projects and who was the eminent Roswell theorist. You know, you might ask him, you might ask Bassett and Greer the same thing. My answer to you is nothing's happened since then. Since the show was canceled, and I think the most horrible thing that came of it was the show was canceled. You know,
no doubt.
That was the punishment right there. That was, you're dead.
What are the chances that maybe it was?
They did kill me.
Right.
They killed me 10 minutes later. I had Bassett there. I think I'd interviewed Bassett. I was about to interview Greer. I was having a cigarette. I said, Brittany, yes, I'll do SNL. I turn. I look at the car. I turn back. Sure, we'll do it. I turn back a split second later. The car's gone for whatever reason. I think, fuck, that was weird. I go back in. I go on, and Weiss tells me 10 minutes later the show has been canceled. So they did kill me.
You know, I've got a theory. I'll throw it out there for you.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Brittany's people, and if you weren't going to do the show, they were going to have to take care of you.
Well, you know, she's hey, listen, I'd show up for her. I think she's a genius, a wonderful person. We did that movie together where she asked me to play her dad. How touching is that?
Definitely.
And but as I say, you know, there's lots of mirror technology now and the holographic projection technology that can be used. So, you know, that may have been just a technical feat that was put on for my display, or not, or I hallucinated it. Who knows? A nice drag on that lucky might have done it, you know?
That's right. Now, you can check out, for people that are interested, or if you're on the fence post about this DVD, you can check out at www.daufo.com. That's D-A.
That's a website set up by the distributor, I believe. Yeah.
That's right. So it's D-A, like Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
UFO.
Yeah. Sure. No, it's, listen, hey, you know, I mean, everything can be hoaxed, and 50% of the people do not believe and will never believe until you walk up and, you know, put one of those little pink babies right in their hands, you know. And that's fine. I know what I saw in Martha's Vineyard that night. I know what I experienced when I had my shared experience with the citizens of upstate New York and with Ontario.
Do you feel that we're hurt by the technology that we have now? Because so many people can fake and so many people can and make up false images and make them look so realistic. Do you think that that's actually hurt us in our advancement with learning more about UFOs or sightings?
Well, I think good science fiction has opened up our minds a little bit to the possibilities, and it certainly did when I was a kid. I think that anywhere we can be entertained is certainly valid, and it's up to the individual to make one's decision on all of these matters, whether it be, you know, the existence of God and His place or her place, or the beings, this supreme cosmic engineer's place in your life. You know, the value of the Christ values, you know, Muhammad, Buddha, Siddhartha, the Bhagavad Gita. You've got to assess and go through all of the religious texts. And then, you know, the work that's been done by Arthur Conan Doyle, The History of Spiritualism, that book should be read. Hans Holzer's book should be read. You know, take it all, get all the material, and, you know, and if you really want to screw yourself up, go to this hotel that I know in Pennsylvania. I think it's the Grand Hotel in somewhere in central Pennsylvania. You won't sleep a wink that night, man. The dressers move around.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. That's
a good, interesting.
Good spot, yeah.
We actually do.
Haunted Hotels, I think it's on that website.
Haunted Hotels.
Oh, yeah,
definitely.
You know, so, but, you know.
They're getting overloaded by all the listeners.
What's that?
I said they're getting overloaded by the listeners right now. I can bet you
well,
on the website.
I got to take Ramus there. That's
Well, definitely. I mean, that's what, you know, that's what I was curious about with your passion and your interest in this. When you have somebody out there like a James Gilliland, or you've got that the guy that goes by the name Prophet Yahweh that can call down the UFOs, I'm just curious
more.
Where
is he located?
He's out of Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Well, we should. Those three guys have to get together, Greer, him, and Gilliland.
Well, it was actually on the Las Vegas News. I can try to find the little clip and email it over to your publicist to have your review. They had it on the news in Las Vegas. The cameraman said, well, we're going to take you to a location so you don't know where we're going, and then let's see you call it down. And they did their little spiel, and they're talking, and all of a sudden he points up to the sky, and the reporter goes, well, are you seeing this? I don't believe I'm looking at this. This thing is coming down, and it's moving. And
did they get it on camera?
Yeah, they have it on film, and they went back to it. I'd like to follow up more with the story, because I know that he was claiming that there was a date last June when they were supposed to make themselves known over Las Vegas, I haven't heard anything about it yet.
There's thousands and thousands of feet of film footage taken over those mountains, Fuji Japan or Nikko. Japan TV, Nippon TV footage that was taken was just really good. That crew got really in close before they got caught. And, you know, just talk to the KLS reporter, George, of course, at this age, and I'm in the dark with the fire here, gentlemen, in Canada. And it's all black outside, so I've got to kind of
look up at the sky. What do you see?
I see just the planets and the Frankfurt special from Scandinavian Airlines going over.
Beautiful. Well, I've appreciated you being on the show. I would love to maybe pick your brain sometime, have you back on, and talk a little bit more about ghosts and the other forms of paranormal that you have an interest in as well.
Well, it's very, very, very entertaining, and it points to a hope that there's something beyond just this material world we live in, and I hope it stimulates people and entertains them, primarily the DVD, and then, you know, let's try to work through to the other end and figure out how to treat each other better and how to operate in life in a more civil manner. I think, you know, maybe we can all learn something from, you know, just the pursuit of these higher matters.
Definitely. And the name of the DVD again is Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs.
That's correct. It's available on Amazon and near Target and FYE and wherever.
Best Buy, Circuit Set, right?
Wherever, Circuit, everywhere where DVDs are sold. Look for my little pinched face. And again, gun through my boring talk, I could talk a gramophone to scrap iron. I'm more exciting than a Black & Decker drill convention.
Oh, that's not true. I really enjoyed the DVD.
There, and you can see the Mexican lights. You can see the Phoenix lights. Some other neat photos that David and I have been pulling off the web and other places, and it's just sort of a review and up to date of where the movement is today and the breadth of it.
Well, I hope to see more of it. And if you do go check out places like James Gilliland, or you go meet with the Prophet Yahweh, I'd love to hopefully see a new DVD coming out.
Well,
with more
you gentlemen
from
are likely to get there. I got an extensive concert schedule coming up. We're opening a House of Blues in Philadelphia. And we've just released the Patron XO Cafe coffee-based tequila liqueur across Canada, which is, let me tell you, this is may cause all-night dancing. Oh, this is a really beautiful beverage. So I've got my hands full there. The UFO thing is just sort of was revived as a passing interest, and, of course, we'll always have that interest as a result of my family being triple-generationed, you know, stimulated in this. And I do support your work and the courage for you to speak out on these matters. And
well, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for sharing your time with us this evening. We appreciate it.
Have a great and safe summer to all your Harley riders out there. Live to ride, ride to live, and shoulder check to the right.
Good night, Mr. Ackroyd. Thank you very much for joining us on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Good night.
Good night. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town. Stay with us. We'll be back with David Sirita from the DVD Dan Ackroyd Unplugged and more right after this.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to Beyond the Darkness. A huge first part of the program with Dan Ackroyd. The second part of the program now with David Sirita, co-producer and co-director of the DVD on UFOs with Dan Ackroyd. And we get deeper into UFOs in this part of the program, especially having to do with how UFOs work. Very interesting stuff indeed. Without further ado, let's dip into it. Here's David Sirita on Beyond the Darkness.
Good evening and welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. This is your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, my co-host and producer, Tim Dennis. Brought a great show to you for the first half of the show here with Dan Ackroyd, who is on hand to talk to us about the new DVD, Dan Ackroyd Unplugged on UFOs. And I'd like to welcome our next guest. His name is David Sirita. He's our second guest of the evening. He is the director and also stars in the Dan Ackroyd Unplugged DVD. David's first aspirations in life were to become an astronaut, and then in 1968, David and a friend witnessed a UFO along with hundreds of other witnesses. After that experience, David grew up as a UFO enthusiast, never living in doubt of the phenomena that has swept the world since the Roswell incident in 1947. His interest is in space, religion, philosophy, astronomy, and science that led him on a career in related fields. He has worked deeply in high technology, on environmental and humanitarian issues, and as a professional photographer for over 20 years. He studied the world of religion, science, physics, and paranormal psychology for the last 25 years. He is also the author of the book Evidence, The Case for NASA's UFOs. There's a link on our website there under the shows category to pick up a copy of that book. But we'd like to welcome to the show Mr. David Sirita.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight, sir.
Yes, we're Dan Ackroyd and I are on a crusade to open people's minds to the UFO phenomena and, you know, get past the, you know, are they real or are they fictional, you know, and is this really happening? We're trying to go way past that. And one of the ways you go way past that is you bring in the expert witnesses, which we did in our film, you know, astronaut Gordon Cooper, who was a U-2 test pilot, a military officer, and an astronaut. And you have John Schussler, who was a contractor at NASA, who collected actual accounts of astronauts' sightings of UFOs at NASA when he was stationed there. And you have, you know, Ken Storch, U.S. Air Force retired, Paul Hillier, Minister of Defense Canada, and many other, you know, President Reagan making very mysterious speeches at the U.N. I mean, many, and when you look at expert witness, I mean, if we were going to a court, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court, which I would love to do, if they had the courage to take this on and you brought all these expert witnesses forward, how could they deny it anymore? I think it would be impossible, and that's what we're trying to do in this film. I mean, we have Dan Ackroyd, who's a genius comic, but also a very well-studied individual, one of the most intelligent people in Hollywood I've ever met. And he's not only so knowledgeable on UFOs, I mean, everything paranormal, and also politics and religion and science. So he's really the best person in Hollywood you could possibly imagine to bring this disclosure, if you will, to the world. So I think, you know, when Stephen Greer, if you know about Project Disclosure,
right,
got literally, you know, many hundreds of expert witnesses from commercial airline pilots to military pilots to some astronauts and military officers to testify to the UFO reality, most of the mainstream media laughed at them. And I just wonder, you know, how does the media get the audacity to laugh at some of the greatest military officers and airline pilots and some of the most credible expert witnesses in our country? I just don't understand how they can do that. And so what we really needed in this movement was a voice, and that voice became Dan Aykroyd. So in a way, we're making history here. I mean, this is a big deal. We're going on radio shows all over the country and all over the world. We've been on Anderson Cooper on CNN, Greta Van Susteren on Fox, and Rita Cosby, MSNBC. I mean, we're really attacking the world here.
Well, I appreciate it, and I enjoyed the DVD myself. There's some amazing footage you're able to share on there, some amazing stories and firsthand accounts. And like I said, you know, it's one thing, as Mr. Aykroyd mentioned in his interview with us, you know, it's one thing when you're hearing from Bubba, who's out floating on the boat after a six-pack doing some fishing with his, you know, Brutus, his buddy, and coming back and seeing that UFO up in the sky. But you're coming at, you know, Gordon Cooper. You're coming with major players that, you know, they have nothing to gain from this. They're not trying to sell tabloid stories. They're not trying to, you know, make some money from the media. They're just telling what they know and what they've experienced and what they've seen for themselves. And that's what I really enjoyed about the disc myself. And again, the disc that we're talking about is a brand new DVD that was just released a few weeks ago. It's called Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs. It's a real documentary about UFOs. Shares some great new footage and information. This isn't a comedy movie. It's not a science fiction movie. It's actual footage that's been gathered and some footage that you've never seen before. How are you privy to get that kind of stuff, David?
Well, you know, when I did my first film and book, Evidence, the Case for NASA UFOs, and I had my own sighting in Berkeley, California in 1967-68, which was a clear metallic double lenticular disc. I mean, very classic. You know, over 100 people in the local neighborhood were looking at it. And when I look back at that case, and knowing now where the Berkeley National Lab is, it was just, if you're in the East Bay, for those who know Oakland and Berkeley very well in San Francisco, when you're in the East Bay and you're looking north towards the Golden Gate Bridge, it's just off the side of the mountain where the Berkeley National Lab is, up at about 3,500 feet. I mean, way off the mountain. But if you were up at that lab, you would have gotten a very clear view of this thing. And I often wonder why there was no military intervention that day, and is it possible the lab was conducting anti-gravity experiments? But going back to Gordon Cooper, because I'm going to take you on an amazing journey here. What we've done in this film is we've made all these cameo little, you know, boxes that are designed so that you, the audience, ask a million questions. And because I can't, you know, answer a million questions in the film, it's designed to open up discussion. And one of my favorite cameos is, of course, Gordon Cooper. I was actually a Cooper myself for a whole decade, starting in about 1968. My mother remarried a science teacher, David F. Cooper, who was a military man from Vietnam. And, you know, when I look back, okay, Gordon Cooper testifies in the film that he chased UFOs in his F-86 fighter jet when he was stationed in Germany just after World War II. And he said they outperformed them in the most radical ways. When he describes every once in a while, one of them will just go zip, and they'll move in ways that we can't move. Now, later, in about 1957, when he was stationed what is now Edwards Air Force Base, his crew filmed a UFO landing at the base, and it puts out these three little gear and it lands. They film it and then it takes off. Okay, well, just before 1957, a little more than a decade before, we had the Battle of 42 case over Los Angeles, which made the newspapers on February 26, 1942, which is just after the Japanese invaded Pearl Harbor. So what happened in the Battle of 42 case was that we saw several what we thought were aircraft flying over Los Angeles late at night, and what happens is we black out the entire state from the Mexican border all the way to Fresno. They order a blackout because they don't want the enemy to see the lights down on the ground. Everybody panics. We fire 1,400 rounds at these supposed Japanese airplanes. We were never bombed. They never attacked us, and eventually some of these UFOs, is what they really are, get down low, and eyewitnesses describe them as amber-colored discs, and the military, you know, puts all the searchlights up on them. And we started firing at these things, and many people died. Many civilians died. A police officer died of a heart attack. And what surfaces later, which is quite recently, are these documents, these classified military documents signed by George C. Marshall, who was Army Chief of Staff at that time. He later becomes the Secretary of Defense, and he wins the Nobel Prize for the Marshall Plan. Well, George C. Marshall states in this memorandum that they retrieved two of these airplanes, one off the coast of Long Beach and one in the San Bernardino Mountains. But when they investigated the aircraft, they were not earthly, and they described this interplanetary phenomenon unit that it basically takes over. And you would assume that the most likely place they would take the crash-retrieved, airplanes, which really are flying saucers, they didn't know what to call them back then. I mean, this is 1942. There wasn't like an official name in our arsenal of military called a flying saucer. And we certainly didn't have anything anti-gravitic back then. They would probably take them to what is now known as Edwards Air Force Base, which was Muroc Field, where they would probably try to reverse engineer them. So after that was 1942. In 1947, many military pilots stationed at Edwards Air Force describe in July 7th, 1947, which is right around the Roswell incident date, there were numerous UFOs sighted over Edwards Air Force Base. And apparently the President of the United States gets involved with the case, and it's very speculative. But then you think, okay, almost a decade later is when Gordon Cooper saw his UFO. And you have to ask yourself some logical questions. I mean, Cooper is a golden witness. He's a U-2 test pilot. He's a fighter pilot. He fought in the war.
Now, you said the first time he viewed them, he was in Germany, though, correct?
He was in Germany, but then...
Can I ask a real quick question on that?
Yeah.
I just happened to be watching a documentary not too long ago called What You Don't Know About UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know around what year that was he was stationed in Germany?
The war was over in about 45, so it was
right.
Just after that.
Because the reason I ask was... I was totally blown away by this. I didn't know it. And they actually have footage that the Nazis were building UFOs.
Okay, that's amazing. That's an amazing story in itself, and I know a lot about Hitler's fascination with anti-gravity. But imagine this. You're getting near the end of the war. The first country today that reverse engineers anti-gravity technology, it can make right-angle turns at a stop of a dime and turn right, will have air superiority on this planet. And right now, the greatest danger is the fact that because we're laughing at this in our mainstream universities and a lot of the mainstream media, more mainstream media is taking it seriously, but a lot of them laugh at it. The danger is that if China or Russia, where they're spending tens of millions of dollars on UFO research, even in India, it's reported in India Net Daily that their aerospace companies are truly interested in anti-gravity. Just today, I got an email that some of the best physicists in our country who are working on exotic anti-gravity are getting grant money from the Chinese because they're interested in it. And our country, Mark Millis at NASA's Breakthrough Propulsion Physics Lab, has been running on $50,000 a year. There have been many people at NASA who have approached me who are interested in my theoretical propulsion physics for UFOs very seriously and said that they, wish we had money to spend on testing exotic propulsion concepts like mine and like several other people's. But there's no money right now because all the money's going to the war. Now,
let's touch more on that and touch more on the danger of somebody else getting anti-grav, and we'll do that, but we've got to take a quick break here. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show. Our guest is David Sirita. We'll be back with more right after this.
I am Greenblock 6, and when I am in your galaxy, I listen to Dave and Tim on the Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Hey guys, it's Tim. I tell you what. You know how you get in those moods where you want to sit down, you want to power through a season of a TV show? I tell you, one of my favorites is Ancient Aliens. And right now, you can go to history.com or the History app, and you can watch full episodes of Ancient Aliens, either history.com or the History app. You can catch up on episodes that you missed there. You can rewatch your favorite episodes, and it's amazing. Of course, if you're not familiar with Ancient Aliens, and why wouldn't you be, especially if you're a Beyond the Darkness listener, Ancient Aliens explores the controversial theory that extraterrestrials have visited Earth for millions of years, from the age of the dinosaurs to ancient Egypt, from early cave drawings to continued mass sightings in the U.S. Each episode gives historic depth to the questions, speculations, provocative controversies, firsthand accounts, and grounded theories surrounding this age-old debate. Did intelligent beings from outer space visit Earth thousands of years ago? And you know what? Every single episode tackles one topic, goes in depth with it, and it gives you chill bumps. It's giving me chill bumps right now just thinking about it. All these different topics, all these different things that bring up different evidence that tells you why ancient aliens might have visited us a long time ago, and even, well, they may still be coming to our planet to this day. Check it out right now. Full episodes of Ancient Aliens at history.com or in the History app. It's real easy. You want to check out the info, the clips, and the episodes? Go to history.com right now and check out Ancient Aliens.
If it weren't for ghosts and aliens, these guys wouldn't be getting any action at all.
Yeah, baby!
I threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town paranormal radio show. Before we went to the break, we're talking to David Sarita, who is the producer, director, and co-host of the brand new DVD, Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs. And we were just kind of talking about the dangers of anti-gravity and if it falls into the wrong hands before we get it. Now, Mr. Sarita, you had mentioned earlier that that they were actually able to videotape UFOs, you know, coming down in Air Force installations and things. Don't you think that we've made some form of contact with them before and are in some type of barter or some kind of agreement with them on technology already?
Well, see, that's speculative, even though I think it's possible, and here's why. When you consider the UFO that, you know, Cooper filmed with, you know, Super 8, 16 or Super 8, they developed the film. He verifies it's very good film, as he says. They sent it to the Pentagon, and there's no answer. Now, if you consider the Battle of 42, how the UFOs encountered very unfriendly fire over Los Angeles, and we shoot them down, and they never fired at us, you got to wonder, why would a UFO land in the middle of a military installation and not encounter any interrogation? There were no other jets. There was no other military presence when it landed. And you got to wonder, was that really a reverse-engineered craft from the Battle of 42 that they were testing, and it was like, thank you very much, Mr. Cooper, but you weren't what, you know, this is for eyes only, and that's why he didn't get an answer. Now, going a decade ahead, because that was 1957 at Edwards when he actually filmed it.
Well, if you're saying that we already possibly did the reverse technology on that, then wouldn't we already maybe have anti-grav as part of our data?
Before I answer that, we'll go to the next point, because that's the most ultimate question.
Okay.
The next one is a decade later, I see the UFO at Berkeley with hundreds of witnesses, let alone how many others in the Bay Area, for a full 20 minutes. And after 20 minutes, it just blinks out and goes invisible, right next to a national lab, Berkeley National Lab. So the question is, if we have this stuff, why can't any president verify it through Congress or through any of our sources that this is truly happening, that we were truly on top of this issue, and we have reverse engineered the technology? And if Congress could verify it, if you go to, you know, presidentialufo.com, Grant Cameron, who runs the site, and you listen to the words of President Reagan in our film, Jimmy Carter has testified that he has actually seen a UFO, and many other presidents have made inquiries. Why can't they get an answer? I mean, until you can get absolute confirmation from the president and Congress, you can't take that risk militarily. Because in the case of Hitler, for example, I believe this firmly, that if he had full control of his anti-gravitic craft, in other words, he could maneuver them, fly, stop, turn, he could have won World War III. He could have clobbered us. Now, there's a retired Air Force colonel who calls me almost on a weekly basis, whose name I'm not allowed to give out, who has advised three presidents on UFOs. He's very, very, you know, fascinated by my propulsion theories, which I've developed over a 25-year period. And he says the same thing. He said UFOs are more classified than the Manhattan Project because of that very fact that in the Manhattan Project, the development of the first atomic bomb, it wasn't long before Russia got it, and it wasn't long before the Chinese got it. So if you don't keep a lid on this anti-gravity stuff, you are risking losing air superiority. Now, I would like more than anything, if we truly discover how to go to the stars, that this should be a universally shared technology to solve our energy crisis, like Dan Aykroyd is saying, and using it to explore the cosmos in peace. And I really firmly believe that. However, in the 20th century, China committed genocide and invaded Tibet and took everything away from these people, and there's nothing they could do about it. In fact, Chairman Mao, when he met with the Dalai Lama, he said to him that China was so envious of the United States' technological abilities, he said religion is poison. He wanted a scientifically developed, adept nation. He didn't want people focusing on spirituality. But Einstein, one of our greatest minds, said religion without science is blind, and science without religion is blind, that you need to have the spiritual revolution in consciousness in order to make these quantum leaps in understanding and scientific technology. So one of the reasons America has excelled more than any country in the history of the world, I mean, just look at all the major inventions from Benjamin Franklin discovering electricity to Thomas Edison inventing DC electricity, the motion picture, the phonograph, which gave us music and motion pictures, to Nikola Tesla inventing alternating current, remote control, neon power, fluorescent lighting. I mean, on and on it goes with Tesla. And then you come to Einstein, you come to the Wright brothers, you come to the first flight, you come to the F-wing fighter jets developed in Canada and the United States, and then you get on to NASA and the trips to the moon, and then the computer, the internet. It didn't happen anywhere else first. It happened here. And that is the point. It's because of our freedom of thought, freedom of expression, the freedom to pursue any inventive idea you want. Many great inventors like Vladimir Zorkin, the father of life, VP of RCA Television, and the father of TV, and Farnsworth, who is also said to be one of the fathers of TV, came here to do it. They wouldn't do it in their country, so here we are again in this same position where the most we have to gain from the UFO movement so far is the answer to our polluting our planets with fossil fuels. Obviously, zero-point energy and anti-gravity would revolutionize life on Earth. And here we are. Everyone says the same thing. I know two top heads of departments at NASA who are very interested in not only mine but many other people's ideas on anti-gravity, and they're all saying the same thing. There's no money. There's no money. So one of the things I've been trying to do is to develop a consortium of the top minds, people like John Hutchison, who you see in my film, the Aykroyd film. You'll see him levitating a 75-pound cannonball and pliers, and he's had every defense contractor go into his lab and trying to find out how he's doing it, and they never hire him. They never give him a contract and say, come and work with us and see if we can perfect this, because there's so little money. Now, today I get this disturbing email that went out to the gamut of the top researchers in the field of anti-gravitics, including people at NASA, saying that some of these guys are getting offers from China to develop anti-gravity. Now, and they're taking the offers because they're starving. They really want to, advance their and test their theoretical ideas. Now, if we get this into the hands of China, I mean, how did the Roman Empire fall? How did Genghis Khan, and all the great empires collapse? It always collapsed when the superior nation felt, we're on the top of the world, nobody can touch us, and they start sitting back and getting too confident, and somebody else who's suffering a lot more than we are figures out the next major revolution. And the next major revolution is anti-gravity. And if you figure that out, we are finished. Our F-22s are they're nothing. These things can't, these slow banking turns are not going to compare in a battle next to, sudden, reverse.
Sure.
Stopping on a dime, turning right.
Well, let me ask you this, playing the devil's advocate here.
Mm-hmm.
We're approaching, let's work on this. Oh, we just don't have the budget for it. Could it just be that's a disinformation because they don't want, as you mentioned, you the Manhattan Project, then all of a sudden everybody was able to do what we were doing. Maybe they just keep saying or acting like, there's no real interest. We're not going to allocate much money to it. So that leaks out to the foreign and that realm. Meanwhile, they are working on it and perfecting it, and they're just not letting people know because, again, they don't want that information. If China, Russia, Germany, any of these countries find out that we are pursuing it actively, that would make them step up quite a bit faster, too, don't you believe?
I believe that, but you see, I've personally known some of the top physicists in our country when I was working on trying to raise funding for helium-3 fusion. I've met Glenn Seaborg, and he chaired the Atomic Energy Commission under Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon, and Murray Gell-Mann, and I've had meetings with physicists from Los Alamos National Labs about my anti-gravity ideas. And most of them, they either laugh at the UFO phenomena, they're not researching this stuff over there, or they simply say that there is no money and we are interested. And I'm sorry, but we wish we had money to test some of your ideas, but we don't. So if Congress can't confirm it and the president can't confirm it, absolutely, then if we are developing it, if somebody in our country is developing it, you have to ask the question, are they nationalistic? Do they believe in the freedom of America, the freedom of religion and speech and all these great things that we have, or do they have allies in some foreign country?
Well, how can private parties, I mean, for you know, you've got NIDS out in Utah that's investigating the Skinwalker Ranch. It's owned by a billionaire from Nevada.
Yeah, I know about them, yeah.
You know, you've got people like him. You've got people like Bill Gates. You know, you've always got your Howard Hughes people that are on the cutting edge.
Well, you really don't. I mean,
don't they want to dump money into helping to learn more?
At NIDS spends small amounts of money on just, you know, trying to, you know, everyone's just so amazed at there's UFOs. You have to get way past that. You have to get into the actual technology, and they're not doing that at NIDS. And definitely Bill Gates is not interested in this stuff, and I've contacted him. I tried to get Paul Allen interested in helium-3 fusion and zero-point energy ideas through his Vulcan Ventures company, and I just keep hearing no all the time. He's only interested in investing in things that are already proven. Well, this country wasn't built on investing in things that are already proven. When J.P. Morgan, the great financier, financed Nikola Tesla, Tesla had an idea, and he just gave him money, and he said, just go for it. Do it. And Tesla changed our world, and so did Thomas Edison. In fact, Tesla gave us radio. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled on June 21st, 1943, that Tesla, Lodge, and Stoner, the true fathers of radio, that Marconi was working for Tesla as a lab assistant, and he stole the patent. But he was, nevertheless, Marconi was the first one to broadcast radio across the Atlantic, and here we are talking on the radio thanks to someone who just funded somebody because they believed in him. Now, you know, guys like Paul Allen and Bill Gates, they're like, well, we're only in this specific area. We're not really interested in those other areas. And I remember Paul Allen getting a call from people in his office saying about helium-3 fusion that, you know, Paul Allen was interested in you know, using natural gas as a backup generator for people's homes in the case of an emergency. But here we are in a national crisis. The end of oil is near. Global warming is devastating our planet, and helium-3 fusion would have changed the world. We had 10 Nobel Prize-winning signatures on developments for helium-3 fusion. We fought in Congress, and in Congress in 1993, I got to speak in this huge panel of brilliant physicists. Al Gore turned us down. He said no to helium-3 fusion, which is far more advanced. 9 grams of helium-3 you can hold in your hand produces the energy equivalent of 1,000 barrels of oil, and there's no harmful radiation, there's no negative side effects. A cargo bay full of moon dust, it has in the space shuttle, has enough energy in it, helium-3 in it, to meet all of our energy demands in our country. And Al Gore turned it down. He's turned me down 3 times, Al Gore, on massive breakthrough technologies. And when you have Nobel Prize-winning signatures on these new technologies, you would think that someone would take you seriously, and you just keep hearing no.
Let me ask you this, if I can, and again, just meaning no disrespect to you at all, Mr. Shrida, I'm just curious on some of these things. You know, one of the claims to fame, I look up Google David Sarita when they said, yeah, David could do your event with you with Dan Aykroyd, and I hadn't had the chance to see the DVD yet, so I'm looking you up, and unfortunately, the first thing that pops up about you is the photographer that discovered Pam Anderson.
So you feel what's so unfortunate about that?
What I'm curious, though, is do you think when that's like the first thing that pops up when you're looking information up, and do you think it's just a, you know, some nutty Hollywood guy that's involved in this?
Just hold that thought, because that's a great thought. Howard Hughes.
Right.
How many women, beautiful women, did he have around him? How many stories are there of every beautiful movie star in Hollywood around him? And he was a national tycoon and an aerospace genius. I mean, the fact that I knew Pamela Anderson has nothing to do with what I'm involved with on a more serious level.
Oh, I understand
She's one of the most, when I knew her, she was one of the most awesome, caring, humanitarian, you know, beautiful blondes in Hollywood. And in fact, today she still protests against cruelty to animals. I mean,
And I'm not putting you down for that. I'm just curious if you think that discredits you.
People do. They stigmatize you because they see something, you know, on the internet, and they think, well, who could he be? You know, I mean, I have many interests many interests in life, and I did professional photography for 20 years, and I was friends with her for a very short duration, but I'm not going to tell you anything negative about her or about what that means. It doesn't change where I put my life work.
Right, and I'm sorry, again, I wasn't asking for anything negative or
parlaying
that.
No, but I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up because so many people bring that up, and I've had major news agencies bring that up, and there's other stuff on there, I mean, on the Internet, and it's all... You know, most of it is true. You know, there's no scandal with David Sirita. I mean, I've planted over a million trees. I've worked on oil spill cleanup. I've marketed reusable shopping bags. I promoted clean energy for a better environment. And it's all true. I worked on bomb detection for landmines and better airport security. And I did see a UFO in 1967, 68. And that's why I'm so interested in this stuff. And I love aviation. So...
Well, you know, Dan Aykroyd had told us, too, to ask you this because he said you were very passionate about it and had a great story and philosophy on this. He said, Dave, ask him, how do UFOs work?
Well, it's a huge discussion, ultimately, but what I do is I've been studying these things closely, looking at photographs and videotape and my own sighting that I remembered. Actually, right after my sighting in 1967-68, in Berkeley, I had these dreams of one set of multicolored lights spinning in a circle clockwise and one spinning anti-clockwise on the same axis. And that was like the implanting, the beginning of the stage of, you know, understanding how they work. And as simple as that is, it actually, there's Bardeen, Cooper, and Schaefer, these three Nobel Prize-winning physicists, win the Nobel Prize for spinning electrons in opposite directions on the same axis. They produce the ultimate superconductivity state. So it gets very deep, you know, how UFOs move. But what I do is I look at all the existing theories that are popular. For example, just starting straight up with wormholes. Wormholes require the negative energy of 100 million suns. That's every sun in our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy. There are about 100 million stars in the Milky Way galaxy. Their total solar energy output for a whole year to produce a wormhole big enough to fit a quarter through. And as the snout of the wormhole gets wider, it takes more energy than that. So what you see there really is that this is ridiculous physics and obviously something that no civilization is ever going to be able to harness enough energy to produce a wormhole. And then our wormholes, the way we're approaching them is wrong, but I don't think wormholes are entirely wrong, but that's how we approach them today. And then you look at rocket and jet engines. The problem with rocket and jet engines is that, and why you're so limited, is because of the inertial mass increases as you increase velocity. So I use three models to describe that. First, imagine a boat moving with a propeller engine moving through water, and as the boat moves through the water, it encounters resistance in the form of the water, and the water's mass pushes up against the boat, making the boat heavier in relationship to the water. And as it gets heavier and the inertia slows it down, you have to spin the propeller faster, which means you need more energy to go faster. And as you go faster, the boat gets heavier, and pretty soon, in order to go any faster, you get to this limit. The boat is going to have to, at a certain velocity, it has to equal the total energy of what it's pushing against, which is the lake or the ocean, and that's impossible. Einstein's law says that it's the increased mass problem, that no spacecraft or subatomic particle or particle can actually reach the speed of light. The reason why is because of the inertia. When a jet moves through air mass with jet engines, the same thing happens in water, but because it's less dense, you can go much faster. And then the ship starts to break up, the aircraft. It's encountering too much pressure, inertia. It's getting too heavy, and eventually it becomes unstable. It starts to shake, and eventually, if you go fast enough, the friction will destroy you, just like the space shuttle when it reenters the Earth. If, you know, the temperatures get very hot on the friction, and then you get heat problems and all those things. So then when you move through space with rocket engines, you know, when we go in the space shuttle or we went to the moon, you actually encounter inertia. You encounter the same problem. The faster you go, the more the background of space, which has mass, is actually pushing on you, and it makes you heavier. And you can't actually, according to Einstein, attain the light speed. So to prove that, in particle accelerators, such as at Fermilab in Chicago, we accelerate in these giant synchrotrons, these magnetic tracks that are, you know, several miles long. We accelerate particles faster and faster and faster. And as they go faster, their mass increases due to inertia. And we've now been able to accelerate even protons up to 99.99% the speed of light. And it takes a trillion electron volts of energy, mass energy equivalent, to get to that velocity. How much is a trillion electron volts of energy? When you detonate an atomic bomb, you get 200 million electron volt energy releasing in the explosion of a nuclear bomb. So a trillion, just think about how many more times it is than that. That's how much energy in an ion thruster drive you would need to do 99% the speed of light. But then there's one even worse problem. As you're, let's say you build these super, you know, ion rocket thrusters, and you're doing 99% the speed of light, which is, the speed of light is 670 million miles per hour, or 186,282 miles per second. Well, when you're going that fast, let's say there's an asteroid coming at you. You're going to turn. And by the time you even think of turning, you're going to hit the thing and it's going to destroy you.
Right.
Or if you can turn, the G-forces on even a small turn at that velocity, even a tenth the speed of light, which is 67 million miles an hour, it's going to destroy you. And it's going to destroy the pilot and everything in your craft. So it's kind of like, it's so frustrating when you look at all the traditional approaches to light speed and beyond, and you just think, you know, here we are in this, on this little blue pearl planet, and with the advent of the Hubble telescope, the universe keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and we can't move anywhere. And even if you could do the speed of light, even that's too slow. So what happens is, what I started to do when I looked at, you know, amazing videotape of UFOs, and I remember my sighting in Berkeley, what I saw that day was very similar to the Billy Meyer craft, a metallic double lenticular, you know, metallic UFO, pure silver. There was nothing written on it, and you can see these wavelets. It's almost like looking at a road in Texas when the hot sun is rippling off of the highway. There's these wavelets coming off of the thing. In fact, those little wavelets are consistent throughout most good video footage of UFOs. Even some of the best footage I've seen in Mexico, there's this one UFO which you'll see in the film, and it's up, you know, apparently. I think it was when this big volcano was erupting down there. And you can see this clear metallic disc, and you can see this pulse. It's got a pulse. So what I started to do is, if you know, with contrast filters and enhancement filters, you can actually see these wavelets, and you can read them. And anyone who knows, you know, quantum particle physics like I do, I've studied it for over, you know, 10 years now, which is more time than most people spend on their PhDs. And I work for many of the top physicists in the world on nuclear fusion and other issues such as bomb detection. You quickly learn through wave logic what is actually happening. And when you really look at what matter is, I mean, Einstein says mass cannot attain the speed of light. But if you really look at what matter is, it's just particles and wavelets. Now, what happens if the UFO is using a wave generator to transform mass into a new state that allows it to move at these superluminal velocities? And that's what happens. Every single time you will see these little wavelets coming off the UFOs. In fact, in the Phoenix Lights documentary by Lynn Keitai, we have a little segment of her film in our film. There's this little boy who describes seeing this 5,000-foot-wide triangle. And the lights are not actually a formation of craft. They're just points of light along the triangle. But he described it was like looking at water with wavelets moving through it. That is consistent with real UFO sightings. Now, how do you get waves to transform mass to the point that they do what? I have actually coined the term, they reduce the mass gravity effect by wave transformation. And exactly how that works, I've got it down to an exact science. I have a 60-page physics paper posted at AmericanAntiGravity.com for people who want to read it. And you can actually see exactly how the waves can transform mass to reduce its mass gravity equivalent. And once you can wave transform a spaceship and a pilot down to near zero, you can never reach absolute zero because it's an infinity. But even as you approach zero mass gravity equivalent, you can do light speed on 2 volts. You don't need these huge thruster engines and these enormous amounts of energy. Gravity no longer has any relationship to you. You're not affected by it anymore. You can turn right on a dime, which explains why UFOs can do that. You can see, for example, the oil fields, this 1960s airliner footage, they're filming out the window, and this UFO just turns. You can see the little fins on the bottom of it, and it just accelerates in a split second at enormous velocity. And one of the reasons why people don't think this footage is real is they don't understand the physics behind it. Anyone knows that if a jet aircraft was hovering next to a, you know, 727, and suddenly it turned its thruster engines towards the passenger jet and fired them on to accelerate really quickly, the shock wave would throw the jet right out of the sky and put it into a spin and probably blow out the windows on it. But no such thing happens when this UFO accelerates, and that's because it's not working under the conventional physics that we use. It has reduced its mass gravity down to a near zero, so when it suddenly accelerates, there is no shock wave because there's no mass anymore. It doesn't have any mass gravity equivalent. There's no inertia. And then what ultimately happens is when these ships are vibrating in really high frequency wavelengths, they literally visibly look like they're turning into light craft. And they can go right through a meteorite.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It sounds almost more like a magnetic shifting to you know, that kind of wavy pattern is almost like they're accelerating their own particles so that they can move through matter and antimatter.
Yeah, see, when you can move through matter, for example, look at how X-rays, which are really high-frequency light rays, go through solid objects to give you a picture of the human body. The higher the frequency of the photon, the more penetrating it is to background layers. And space is a background layer. So when you're vibrating at X-ray and gamma wavelengths and beyond, super gammas, you don't encounter inertia. You just keep going, and there's no limit to how you go. And ultimately, the highest level of work that I'm doing is on what's called the singularity, which is the non-dual substratum of our universe, where there is absolutely no inertia, no resistance, and you can move instantaneously anywhere you want in the universe. And I get into that at the end of my paper, exactly how that happens. It was actually a physicist named Paul Dirac who won the Nobel Prize with Erwin Schrodinger, who discovers this substratum to our universe that answers everything. And he was rejected by his peers, but now his paper I am bringing forward into the public eye because of the significance of his work. I mean, the man won the Nobel Prize, and when Schrodinger, his partner, is also one of the primary discoverers of wave theory, you know, what we now know as wave theory today. So these are masters of waves. These guys really, really, really open your mind up to what reality really is. Reality is just particles and waves. And when you understand that high frequency, the higher the frequency of the wave, the lower the mass gravity equivalent, and the lower, you don't encounter as much inertia as you go into these higher frequency states. You know, like X-ray, gamma radiation just goes through anything. It can go through solid steel. It can go through walls like butter. I mean, it doesn't encounter. So you don't have to turn out of the way of an asteroid when you're in that state. So the universe is coded. It's protected in a way. We don't really get to visit other star systems until we evolve spiritually and scientifically. And the spiritual revolution is so important to understand the physics of getting into the singularity. And when people read my paper, they'll really know why.
Now, we have about a minute and a half left here on the show with you. I'd love to have you back on to talk more about singularity and some of your other theories and ideas on this. One thing I would like to know, though, is do you believe that in our lifetime we are going to get to that point in the next 50 to 100 years?
If we don't destroy the planet with global warming and all these fossil fuels, if we don't just sit here and go, okay, you know, my Cadillac Escalade, my BMW, this is the peak of technology. It's not the car you drive, it's the fuel you use. And ultimately, if we can get on to hydrogen and zero-point energy, and, you know, for now, at least using biodiesel and hydrogen, I think, is the way to go. And
I just read that today. I think they said in the news somebody is going straight to hydrogen. They're not even going to be doing any more gas in their country. Do you know where that was?
Oh, no. I mean, probably Germany. And actually, BMW has a 12-cylinder hydrogen car they've had perfected for years. It's going to go on the market in 2 years. And, you know, the Germans are really, really doing profound.
I don't believe it was Germany, but, yeah, I just read an article on really? MSN News today that they said, and it was a little blurb in the news, that the country or the state in the country's going gas-free. They're no longer going to accept petrol. They're going straight to hydrogen.
That's fantastic. I want to know who they are, because that, you know, I also do a lot of work. I'm doing a whole book in that field right now, a whole, you know, color way out book on sustainable Great. Technologies. But, you know, Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs, to me, in a nutshell, this is disclosure. It's the first step of disclosure. We have expert witnesses in our film. We have some of the best footage to date. It is truly, I believe, you know, authentic UFO footage, and every shot is labeled. We have some artist renderings, so don't think those are hoaxes. They are labeled as such artist renderings.
Well, David, I can't thank you enough for being part of the show, and like I said, I'd like to have you back on here in the future to talk more, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dave.
You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show. Our program tonight was with Dan Aykroyd and David Cerita with the brand new DVD, Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs.
So there you go, folks. Dan Aykroyd and David Cerita both on Beyond the Darkness on a Way Back Wednesday. And it's been a great week so far. Tomorrow, Gary Busey and some Parashare. I told you guys I wouldn't hold out on you. We do some Parashare this week. We're going to get to it. We're going to do some Gary Busey tomorrow. I'm going to blow your mind tomorrow. Gary Busey joins the program and a Way Back Week continues here on Beyond the Darkness. For Dave Schrader, who's lost somewhere in England, I'm Tim Dennis. Have a great hump day, everybody.